Welcome to the Final Girls Podcast. I'm Anna Bogutska, your unimmaculate podcast host. Alongside our regular series exploring horror film history, occasionally I'm granted time with some of the most exciting horror filmmakers to talk about the films that they've got coming out now. This past weekend, the horror world was abuzz about the release of Immaculate, a gothic horror starring Sydney Sweeney as a novitiate nun who joins a remote convent in Italy, only to very quickly realize that there's something very off about her new home. I had the pleasure of chatting with Sweeney, both the star and the producer of Immaculate, as well as director Michael Mohan. This is a long-time project for Sweeney, who first auditioned for the film over a decade ago. And her collaboration with Mohan also goes way back, and they both worked together on the truly delightful erotic thriller The Voyeurs before coming together again to make Immaculate. In this bonus episode, you'll first hear me talk to Sydney and Michael, and as a fair warning, we speak in very, very broad terms about the ending, but there's a little break-in to serve as a spoiler warning. Following that, you'll hear the spoiler-free part of my review of the film with Bloody Disgusting's head critic Megan Navarro. This part of the review is entirely spoiler-free, and if you want to hear the rest of our chat, you can find that over on the Final Girls Patreon page, where I regularly post in-depth reviews of new releases across horror film and TV. And let me tell you, the ending is what made Immaculate for me, so go watch it, listen to the full episode over there, and let me know your thoughts about that finale. With all of that said, please enjoy my conversation with Sydney Sweeney and Michael Mohan. Hi guys, how are you doing?
Hey.
It's really nice to meet you. And Sydney, I was just watching your other film just now, so it's nice to see you again.
Yes.
I'm going to kick off straight away. First of all, I wanted to ask for both of you, what is your relationship with horror?
I mean, I came to horror a little late. When I was a kid, I was too scared to go down the horror aisle of the video store. I had to avoid it. And it wasn't until I got to film school that I actually was old enough to experience horror. No, that's not true. That's not true. Scream came out when I was in high school, and Scream, you know, within I Know What You Did Last Summer, those were sort of the gateway for me. And then when I got to film school, that's when I really fell in love with the craft of horror, like with Halloween, you know, which is just, you know, one of the best directed films of all time, you know.
Hard agree. What about you, Sydney?
My dad is a big horror fan, and he had me watching films at a very young age that I probably shouldn't have been watching. So I've had the horror bug for quite a long time.
And, you know, I was reading about the journey of Immaculate, and I know that you auditioned for this film like 10 years ago. Can you tell me a little bit about what about this particular project kept your interest for so long and made you want to take it on board as a producer, not solely as an actress?
Well, I couldn't imagine it not being made. I couldn't imagine anyone else making it. And so I had to be the producer. I had to get off the ground. And I think on the acting side, it was just so fascinating to see a character that goes through such a transformation. And then also she can't outrun the scariest thing of all. Like that, it's truly growing inside her, and having that to play with as an actor adds so many layers and levels to a performance, and it's really fun to be able to stretch my legs like that.
So what do you think for you, well, for both of you, what is the scariest part of Immaculate for you?
I mean, the scariest part is wondering what my in-laws are going to think of the movie. That's the scariest part for me.
Love that.
What about you, Sid?
Honestly, my scariest moment was last night at the premiere, because I brought my grandmas, and I was terrified of what they're going to think of the film, because we had them be extras. We dressed them up as nuns.
Yeah.
Them in the film, but they had no idea what the script was about or what the movie was even
deal
They
with?
had
Wow.
zero clue. So I was very nervous to see the response.
They hugged me afterwards, so it must
They
have been okay.
really they loved it. They
That's
loved it.
big.
There were a few, disapproving looks from a grandee leaning over, going, "Oh God, Sydney." Like mainly when I went on a killing rampage, but
Did you spend the entire screening at the premiere just looking at your grandmas?
it was a look between my grandmas and my dad.
I wanted to ask, what about the body horror aspect, which is one of the things that really sticks out a lot, particularly concerning women's bodies and demanding a lot from you, Sydney. Was that an important film for you to explore in the story and through the horror?
I really wanted to embody Cecilia in a way where you truly see she's falling apart. Like, I wanted to see that the horror wasn't just the outside elements, but it was from within as well.
Can I say something?
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a shot of a fingernail in the scene.
Yep.
And so we had to make this movie so quickly because Sid had to go off to shoot Anyone But You afterwards. So oftentimes we had like two crews working simultaneously. And I need to say, Sydney directed that shot of the fingernail being cut off because I had to go shoot a different unit. So the grossest part of the movie is fully because of her.
Thank you.
I have a bone to pick in that case because I have a big thing about fingernails and I can tolerate a lot of horror, but that one shot made me look away. And let me ask you then, is there something that was particularly the grossest element for you out of all of the many body adjacent scenes in this film? What was the most extreme one for you?
Grossest.
Yes, I know what it is. I'll answer for
What?
you. When she had to vomit.
Oh yes, I just can't.
Oh.
I can't with it.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, like in the future, if we ever do a vomit scene again, you have to do it practically because it was such a pain. So there's a couple vomit scenes in the film. One of them we did practically, and she was able, you did one take and that was it.
Oh, I
It's
can't.
and typically Sid is like game to do
I'm for everything,
yeah,
but
she will do anything you ask her.
weird textures and substances in your mouth.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to actually throw up.
I know. And then so later we had to do it with CG and no idea how much work went into that. It was so much work. We went back, I think it's like revision number 70. In the future, what we'll do is we'll get a smoothie and we'll throw all the smoothies.
Or
Yeah.
why can't we just have something real? They're like, no, we're gonna mash up everything from Crafty.
Yeah.
Put it all in a giant bowl, crush it up, pour milk, water,
Orange
everything,
juice.
orange juice. And when I say everything, like it's random crackers, snacks, donuts. And I'm
It's
like,
basically vomit. It's
it's
basically
basically
what would be in your
vomit. And I'm
stomach.
like, why can't it just be something that looks like it?
I do have to say this though,
Yeah.
Betty, our makeup person, she was wonderful. She was wonderful. I don't want to throw her under the
No,
bus.
she's awesome. She kept trying to put like mint flavor in it, but honestly,
Cool.
that just made it worse.
Oh my God, I really thought it was just a smoothie. I
Oh, I
really
wish
did.
it was.
It should have been.
It should have been.
So
What about
it'll be next movie, it'll be BYOP, bring your own
bring your
puke.
own?
What about some of the other challenges of, I mean, every time I speak to horror filmmakers or anyone who's made a horror film, they're always like these fun little anecdotes about how the things that seem most difficult on screen are actually the most fun to shoot and to make. What were, aside of the vomit tasting vomity, what were some of the challenges that you faced?
I think this is the first time we've ever done jump scares. And so the timing of the timing of revealing the horror, coupled with revealing her reaction to the horror, coupled with like where the actual sound of the jump scare goes, was something that I simply didn't have experience with. And you can study jump scares as much as you want. You can try to emulate them perfectly. And I think what we really learned is that you just need all of the options because you don't know what's going to work until you're in the edit. And some of the jump scares where I thought we had flubbed the take, that was actually the one that worked the most. Like especially there's an early one that's very simple where Mother Superior is standing behind her and you don't know that she's there. And it the take that's used was not the take that I thought was the scariest, but it, when we put them all in, that was the one that actually made people jump, or the reveal at the end with in the catacombs, big jump scare there. We shot it like so many different ways, and you really don't know until you're in the edit and you put the sound design in, because when you're on set, you think you have it, but you don't really know. And getting all those options, it's very technical.
And tell me, Sydney, it's been a good half of the movie with this huge, you know, pregnant belly on you. What was it like to shoot particularly more physically demanding scenes with that on?
I loved it. I was able to put a lot of heat packs inside, and I'd have little snacks in there too. So I was having a blast. It kept me warm, and it was really cold.
Also, like, it was very natural.
I liked it.
Yeah, like,
yeah. It wasn't odd in any sense.
No.
I liked
it. Oh, that's nice to hear. It's good. A good pregnant belly, but vomit could be better.
Yes.
And
yes.
Tell me a little bit about shooting in the catacombs. Was that a set? Was that a real life location?
No, those were real catacombs.
Yeah.
Did that add to the creepiness of this nunnery, of being so separate and the other side of the world? Tell me about that.
Technically, it was probably one of the most challenging days, because our time was so limited with whenever we were down below, because we were only be down there for like 45.
It was an hour and a half, and then we'd have to resurface to get oxygen, and then we could go back down for an hour and a half. And we only had 7.5 hours that day to shoot the whole sequence.
Wow.
A lot of it, we just, at a certain point, once I got all the pieces that I knew I needed, we just sent Sydney out with Armando, our Steadicam operator, and we were just like, just go, just
run so wild. Armando and I would just be running through all of the passageways with our one little light, no idea where we would end up.
Yeah. And it was really up to Christian Messini, our editor, to then take all of that footage and then sort of figure out the best way to use it.
Oh my God.
The thing that's crazy is, so like, there were bones there, and if you pick them up, they would crumble in your hand. And at the end of the day, you know, you're breathing in all of this, I don't know what it would be, like the ashes of dead, they're not ashes because they weren't burnt, all the decomposed material. And so when we resurfaced at the very end, everybody was blowing their noses and it looked like mud. And we realized that it was all the basically people that had, we'd breathed them in. And then, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Holy shit.
Sorry. You did not have like.
Yeah, of course. I was rolling around in it.
Yeah. So we, exactly. It's not like. Like, literally, I wonder if, like, there are spirits, if there were spirits attacking matter, they've now been infused in our bodies.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, you'll always carry a little bit of immaculate in you, I guess.
Always.
And then, I do have to ask you about the ending. Is that okay?
Yeah.
We've been talking about it, but not talking in detail about it. Like, we can go in a more broad sense. Yeah. Yes.
God saved me for a reason, but I'm still searching for what that reason is.
I just wanted to hear about the experience of shooting that birth scene, and also the choice of the prolonged close-up, which is very stressful to watch.
I feel like we need to come up with a fake story about it, because it was really easy. It wasn't hard. It wasn't hard at all. I mean, when I read the script, you know, the script was originally a studio movie, so it had a much more conservative ending. And, you know, when we decided to make it, you know, we were making this independently, we had the freedom to do whatever we wanted to. And Sydney's one thing, she was like, you know, in this movie, I just want to get covered head to toe in blood. Like, just let's go wild. And so that's how we came up with the ending as it was. And, you know, also Sid's an actor who can hold a 2.5 minute long take and just go. So honestly, on the day we figured out the camera blocking, we were like, okay, this is where it's going to happen.
We'll
then
you'll walk over here
and then you walk back. We just did the blocking rehearsal a number of times. So that the first AC had, you know, so that it would be in focus and everything.
You're like, do you want to rehearse this? And I'm like,
nope.
No, let's just go for it.
Nope. And then
there's just one take.
Yeah. That's take one. Is take one.
Wow. And what about, Sydney, what about this kind of image of, oh, I just want to be covered head to toe in blood at some point in the film? Why was that one of the things you wanted to get from making a horror movie?
I mean, I've loved Carrie. I love ready or not. Like I love the symbol of this character that is just almost utterly defeated, but then finds such a crazy strength within. It's also just fun as an actor. I'm trying to find like a really cool way to talk about it all, but
It's just
truthfully,
fun. I
it's
think
just
yeah, it's
fun.
just there's a sense of catharsis to it too. Like the audience is just through this torturous, you're held captive, and then finally we have this moment where it's like it all comes out in one big explosion of terror, and then that's the end of the movie.
I mean, I love that. I love car you won't see it very well, but I've got that final scene tattooed on my arm here.
Oh,
So I deeply appreciate that. And I wanted to know, like, you're talking about this ending, this catharsis, but did you think about what's happening to Cecilia after that final extreme note?
I guess we don't know.
yeah.
No possibility for Immaculate too?
I guess we don't know.
Okay. Thank you so much both for your time and for making this film. I'm very excited to see what you make next.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Megan, thank you so much for doing this. I'm so appreciative of having you on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to get to talk to you.
So this is something I do with all the guests on the show, and because we haven't spoken before, I just wanted to ask you, what is your own personal relationship with horror?
I think like a lot of extreme lifelong horror fans, we kind of came into it way too young. For me, I had a dad who was very into movies and would go to the video store all of the time. And I would go with him, and somehow I ended up watching Ghostbusters at age 4, and the library ghost creeped me out, and it just sparked my I know. And it sparked my love affair with being scared. Like there was a safety and but it was thrilling. And so I just kind of wound up going to the video store and picking out movies that looked like they had monsters similar, and it just snowballed. And my dad was a crazy person who never said no. He just, sure, it's a movie. Why not? So yeah, I just kind of like it just snowballed from there. And I watched everything that I could since childhood till now.
Oh, I love it. You know what? I really love hearing people's origin horror stories from when they were kids or not kids. It's always delightful how someone discovers a genre at any point in their life and just becomes consumed.
I know. It's so easy to do, I feel like, with horror.
I agree. And I think this is the beauty of it as well. Everyone has a little horror origin story.
Yes, they do.
So we're here to talk about one of two pregnant nun movies that we have coming out within the span of a month, together with The First Omen, which comes out a little bit later in April. We're here to talk about Immaculate, which is out in the UK this weekend, came out on Friday. So before we get straight into Immaculate, I wanted to ask you a little bit about kind of nunsploitation, which is a word that's been bandied around a lot in the coverage of both of these films, with Immaculate first, obviously. So can you tell me a little bit what this subgenre is all about for listeners that might have not heard of it before and some of the key texts?
So, nunsploitation is like a sub genre or an offshoot of exploitation cinema, which was really prominent in the 60s, 70s, through the 80s. Primarily, I think Europeans did this really well. But it's a type of usually lower budget films that are exploiting prominent cultural fears at the time or just film trends. And usually they're doing it to shock or titillate or tantalize or just like, get an extreme reaction out of you. And so nunsploitation is the nun or religious version of that, that's really kind of exploiting religious iconography. Key texts would be like the devils is the one that everybody thinks of. And Satanico Pandemonium, which is from Mexico. 1975, which was a similar, nun being seduced to the dark side, Alucarda, the 90s, I think right on the bubble in the early 90s, there was Dark Waters, Miss 45 isn't really religious, but she does exploit the nun habit and the iconography to kind of lean into that. But yeah, I think it's primarily in that era. It definitely leads into the present as we're seeing now.
Yeah, so let's dive straight into Immaculate. How does this film play into the genre, or play with some of the visuals or the ideas that Nunsploitation kind of brought forward?
So obviously, it is all set in a convent. It's all about a nun who's, having immaculate conception, but they are injecting Italian horror all throughout this movie. Michael Mohan is pulling from A Bay of Blood. Sister Cecilia is heavily kind of parallel to Susie Bannon in Suspiria. The Red Queen kills seven times. I mean, you've got all of these different Italian horror nods that I think is really where you're seeing like the nunsploitation push through. And also in just how kind of salacious the horror gets with these nuns, I think is heavily throwback to nunsploitation.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that we'll touch upon later on, the way that the film plays with a convent as an inherently creepy and very much unsafe and unimmaculate place, very tainted always. And even from the very beginning, and I think this comes into Sydney Sweeney's star persona, not just her performance, how they play with her physique and the way that she looks, into that salaciousness. But before we get into all of that, what expectations did you have of Immaculate going in? Because I believe a big narrative around the film has been not just Sydney Sweeney as a star, as a young star who's been very, very visible after breaking out in Euphoria, who's been really trying her hand at a number of different genres. She's done an erotic thriller with the same director, Michael Mohan. She's done a romantic comedy that it was surprisingly very successful. And this is also her first film as a producer. So she's been very attached and very front and center with this film. What did you think it was going to be before you saw it?
I honestly didn't have a whole lot in the way of expectations other than her, because religious horror is becoming a tougher sell for me because I feel like it's been around for so long and we've seen a lot of these stories already so many times that it's kind of a tough sell. But she has her finger on the pulse in a really interesting way, like you were just talking about. I think she kind of knows what audiences want. Like the rom-com that just came out that surprised everybody. So I think she, what would make her be so passionate about this particular project that she's been trying to get it made for a very long time. So I
Ten
think
years,
that,
yeah.
yeah. So I think that alone was like, all right, I don't really know if I have any expectations, but there's got to be something for this to be such a huge passion project for her.
See, that's interesting because I was all in on Sydney Sweeney as a star anyway. I really liked her in Reality, which is a much more stripped down, dramatic performance and a really interesting film at that. Loved the weird teen melodrama, exploitation melodrama, really, that is Euphoria, particularly in the second season. I think she's such an actress of extremes that I completely got the dipping her toe into horror, and it won't surprise us or the listeners to know that I think horror has always been a really fertile genre for female performances, pun intended. And also, particularly in the last decade, has given us really wonderful roles for actresses to really dig their claws in and to do something very out there, very experimental, very unlike what we've seen them do before. I had no idea that it was such a passion project for her. The fact that she kind of resurrected the script once she had a bit more weight to throw around in Hollywood to actually get it made, that surprised me. But we'll get into that later.
So let's talk a little bit about her since we've brought her up. Kind of like, tell me, what did you think of Sister Cecilia as a character and Sweeney's performance of her?
I think that this is definitely a character that kind of lives and dies by the performer because there's really not a whole lot on the page to Sister Cecilia. She's your typical kind of ingenue when you first meet her, just like a sweet, like go with the flow nun. When we're meeting her at the station where the police are asking why she's there and interrogating her. Even how she's so laid back when she encounters all of the quirky kind of other nuns at this convent. So there's not really anything that we learn about her until she reveals a pivotal like childhood moment that sent her down this path of wanting to be a nun. So for the most of the movie, it's really just her reacting. And I think that Sydney Sweeney is such a good job that she carries this arc well. She does the doe-eyed ingenue really well. And where she goes from there is just increasingly more and more engaging and compelling to watch.
I agree that there's not that much to her in the first half. I found myself, this is what I meant when I said that I was surprised that this was the script that she wanted to attach herself to for so long. Because I was really struggling to see what the appeal was, if I'm being really honest. I was like, this is such a basic beat of a horror script.
It's so thin. It's very thin.
And I loved the second half, which we'll get a kind of into maybe a little bit more in the spoilery section. But for listeners who might have not seen this film yet, it is very much her reacting to things happening and her being pure and virginal and good as the key characteristics of her as a character. And I don't know what this tells you about me as a person. I just don't buy it in any character. I'm always like looking for a little bit of darkness, a little bit of something in a character that makes them tick, how and how they move around the world. I just don't understand a young woman who, or any character who is just so clean cut.
Yes. Yeah, she's just a wholesome and that's it.
I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's not helped when you get a little tidbit of some of the other nuns her age, and they're all very attractive, very young, very promising, and yeah, but she's the only one who's just pure. That's it. Just straightforward, pure.
Yeah, and I think this kind of one of the things I really liked the way that the film did play around with was this fish out of water element. You know, she's this young American girl who goes to a convent in Italy. She doesn't speak the language. People talk over her, talk about her to her face because they know she can't understand them. Now, what did you make of the way that it plays around with the hostile and increasingly oppressive environment around her?
It's weird because, like you said, it's kind of contradictory. Like for a horror movie, that's great. You want that, but it's so in contrast to how she behaves and how she just rolls with it. Like she just seems unflappable at first, you know? She's just, sure, this is normal. No, this is not normal.
Maybe. I don't know if this is, if this might be a bit facetious, but is this the way that maybe someone who's never been to any country in Europe and vice versa, a European person who's never been to America would react to anything? Be like, oh, well, I guess this is just how they roll here.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because they have that bathroom encounter where they just walk in and she hasn't locked the
Oh my
door and she's just
God.
like, yeah, this is that's fine.
I'm
And
so glad you bring that up because I was in the screening room and I looked around. It's like, wait, that's not, I mean, I wouldn't let a friend do that. Like, what is
no.
happening?
Yeah, it was a very bizarre scene, and I think that this kind of was talking about what you were saying about the first half is so bizarre, where you can't help but notice these little details because there's not much there plotting, but then there's these really bizarre encounters that feels like maybe Michael Mohan is trying to tap into, nunsploitation, but he's not going deep enough. So you just have these really awkward social interactions that kind of are not adding up.
I did like, and I don't know if this is deliberate or not, but you sort of mentioned it at the start, the exploitation vibe of 1970s or 1980s, essentially Eurotrash films. Mm-hmm. No, when everyone is kind of, there's actors from all around the world, you know, there's like Spanish, Swedish, whatever, American actors, but everybody used to be dubbed into a very bland, generic, illogical kind of English to maximize exporting potential. And no one is dubbed here. But I got the same sensation because nobody, like very few people are Italian in this movie, even though it's set in Italy. And I was kind of like, oh, is this deliberate? Are you doing this to kind of echo 1980s exploitation films to kind of give it this like trashy environment where none of this is actually, you know, belongs to the place where it's set?
I mean, I kind of feel like it because there are so many bath scenes, but they are the most chase bath scenes, too. So it's this weird kind of like sanitized exploitation thing that's happening, you know, like I've never in an 80s, 70s like Euro nunsploitation, this would be a wet habit contest happening. There would be some kind of lust between nuns, perhaps. Mm-hmm. There would be something. But here it's like this is the sweetest nunsploitation bath, and it happens over and over. These nuns are the cleanest. But yeah, it's this weird contrast of where he's trying to emulate these movies, but in the most sanitized, like modern way. And it's kind of jarring at first to get in this movie's wavelength.
And what do you think about the way that horror is dripped into the plot? Because it starts off with a bang. It starts off with a nun rushing out of this convent, being chased by four ominous looking black habit kind of dressed nuns who break her leg as she's trying to escape, which is a great little opener, I must say.
Yeah, I agree.
So how does it then like kick off with a bang, and then how do you feel it kind of brings the horror back up to that level?
It's slow. I think it's very slow because that opening, like you said, is really effective. Like, you don't expect to see some bone crunching straight away for a nun. And then it slows down, and I think it's way more interested in setting up atmosphere and jump scares. And this is not the movie for jump scares, I don't think.
Tell me more.
Well, I mean, if you're leaning into nunsploitation and Italian horror, I think a lot of the violence and shocking elements is really what we love about that and really what this movie is building to. Mm. It just takes its sweet time getting there because instead it wants to focus on, I think it's trying to disorient audiences, keep us guessing, use these fake out red herring jump scares. But it's just kind of at odds. I think it's a little bit the pacing. It throws the pacing off a little bit.
I agree. I think for me, it sagged a bit in the middle.
Yes, big
great
time.
Great start, floppy middle, really good ending.
Yes.
Did want to ask kind of about this, the atmospheric build, the environment, the whole key plot line of the film. And I don't think it's a spoiler because it's literally the title, about the idea of this immaculate conception of Sister Cecilia suddenly becoming pregnant and then becoming almost saint-like. What do you make of that as a horror plot, but also all the imagery that it sets us up for?
I think it's a pretty clever setup, period. I actually had watched a red carpet interview with Michael Mohan. I think it was Fangoria had posted it, where this movie was originally, when Sydney first kind of came on board, this was a teen horror movie.
Yes.
And, you know, in high school, which would have been a really weird approach. And I think doing it this way is smarter and more effective. And I love that, you know, cinematographer Alicia Christian wanted to kind of evoke Renaissance paintings. Mm-hmm. So you have this art house exploitation thing going, which visually makes it interesting, even when that middle is sagging. But then if you're a hardcore horror fan or exploitation cinema fan, you're noticing things like, what have you done to Solange? And that there's a key scene where it's her in a room full of men from the church. And that's the interrogation scene from there. Mario Bava's Bay of Blood is everywhere. The Red Queen kills 7 times with the imagery of the Red Veil nuns. I think you have these really effective imagery that are really deep cuts, but I think he's exploring them kind of superficially, so I'm not sure that audiences are really connecting the horror of that. But it is this gorgeous kind of gothic atmosphere that's happening regardless because of all of these pieces, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder, and this is my thing also with giallo in a larger sense. It's not a genre of horror that I know the most about. It's definitely going to be something I'll cover more in depth in the future of the podcast and kind of as a discovery for myself as well. I love everything I've seen so far, but a lot of the times I'm left with the same sense that I was left with Immaculate, where I love some of the images so much. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous film. The way that it frames Sydney Sweeney, who is really has that sort of beatific look, especially when they put the pregnant belly in her and they're sort of worshiping her and dressing her up as almost like a Virgin Mary figure.
Yes.
It's incredibly evocative and also disturbing because she's doing things with her face there that make you fearful for her, even though this image is really gorgeous and really beautifully designed. The nuns with the red veil, like all of the images in the in the bathing room, I guess. even when someone tries to kill her while she's taking a bath, is so beautifully shot and kind of frames her in just the right way and then disturbs that kind of graceful image. But similarly to some giallo films, I feel like, what are these images adding to the story? They're a great vibe.
It's a vibe. I think that's a good way to put it.
They're a great vibe, but I don't think they actually have depth or narrative point to them.
Yeah. And not here.
Primarily, I remember being a little bit frustrated after the movie ended with the red veil nuns. I'm like, what is that about? I want to know more about that. Tell me more.
You don't get to, and I think you're just kind of left to fill in your own blanks because there's really not a lot to grab onto. There's not much story-wise, so I think the story is pretty straightforward and simple. And so there's the beautiful imagery that kind of leaves you hanging and left to kind of attribute your own meaning to them because they really left dangling in the story.
And I think it might be time for us to move into spoilers so we can actually talk about the way that story unfolds. Yes. And twists around. So for anyone listening to this, consider this your spoiler warning.